we now know that ice sheets around the world contain much valuable information about the planet's past, and in particular, the history of the Earth's climate. The U.S. Geological Survey National Ice Core Laboratory near Denver is the repository for ice core samples of ice sheets collected all over the world. Joining us now is the assistant curator of the laboratory, Richard Nunn, to tell us some more about the lab and what they do. Richard, welcome to the Roadhouse.
Well, it's great to be here. Thanks, guys.
This is an interesting subject to us folks up in the frozen. I don't know. Are you in your lab right now, where it's minus 36 degrees Celsius?
I'm nearby it. I'm in the office right now, where it's nice and toasty. But yeah, it seems like the temperatures in our freezer are pretty close to what you guys have right now.
That's right. We've been getting close to your low temperatures there. Now, we understand that the lab was started about 23 years ago.
Yeah,
23
that's right.
years ago. How did it get started, and why?
So we'd been doing ice coring well before that, but in general what they would do is actually send all of the scientists out to the field to actually process the ice out there and cut it into the various samples they wanted for analysis, and that was an incredibly expensive endeavor. So at some point when they were drilling the Greenland Ice Sheet Project back in 1988, they decided they wanted to build a central repository where all these cores could be stored, and that way we have a central location that folks can come to actually work on the ice, get their samples, and ship them off to the universities for analysis. So it was basically just a way to sort of consolidate everything in one location and give us the space to actually work on the ice.
Well, who can store ice there? Is it just our scientists? Or, I mean, United States?
So we're funded by the National Science Foundation, and the majority of the polar work that's done in terms of drilling ice cores in Greenland or Antarctica, it's funded by the National Science Foundation. So anything that they've funded to drill will then end up back here and in our collection.
And how long before the lab started have we been drilling ice cores?
Actually, the very first core that the U.S. drilled was in Greenland at a place called Camp Century, and that was in the late 1950s. If I remember right, it was 1958. And we do have that core here still. So there was a number of cores that were drilled, but they were just stored in a location in Buffalo, New York, that didn't really have any workspace. It was simply just a freezer where they could stuff all the cores in.
And how many cores do you have now?
We currently have just over 18,000 meters worth of ice stored in here, and that's probably from about maybe 50 or 60 different locations, primarily from Antarctica, a good chunk from Greenland, and a handful of alpine cores from high mountain ranges.
18,000 meters, can you quickly convert that to, say, miles?
Goodness, I'm not sure exactly what that conversion would be. It's quite a few miles, that's for sure.
Okay. And I understand, for example, that some of the ice sheets are maybe a mile or two thick.
Yeah. The thickest part of Antarctica is a little over 2 miles thick, about 4,000 meters on average before we get to bedrock. And some of our cores we've actually drilled down. The deepest one in our collection was drilled in eastern Antarctica at a place called Vostok, and they drilled down 3,600 meters, and that's just over 2 miles.
Wow. All right, and you still have some of that core stored in your lab?
Yeah, that was actually one of the international efforts. It was a joint effort back in the 90s between the United States, France, and Russia. It's actually a Russian station, so we have a third of that core here. It also happens to be the oldest core in our collection. The ice at the bottom of it is a little over 400,000 years old.
Wow. And how do you know that?
There's various methods they use for dating the cores. There's actually a pretty significant difference in both the chemistry and the electrical conductivity of snowfall from the summer and the winter. So we can use machines that actually test the conductivity of the ice to sort of get these readings that show the changes between summer and winter, and the chemical analysis shows that as well. And occasionally we run across volcanic ash layers, which they can use radiometric dating techniques to get a specific age on those.
Huh.
And then they can compare all of that information to come up with an age. And in general, through these different separate means, they usually come up within an age within about 10 or 15 years of each other. I think the worst I've ever seen was maybe a century off, and when we're looking at ice that's a few hundred thousand years old, plus or minus a century, it's not as good as we could hope for.
And is it under a microscope, is it sort of a visible ring, like a tree ring?
Not even under a microscope, actually. If you're looking at Greenland ice, there's a significant amount of dust from North America that falls on Greenland, and you can actually see visible bands. You get a higher dust concentration in the summer months, and you'll actually see a cloudy band, and then a clear band, and then another cloudy band. In Antarctica, the same process is happening, but you can't really see it because there's such a small amount, so we have to rely on our instrumentation to pick that up.
So when you say dust, whatever's in the atmosphere is that precipitating out there, it's not necessarily soil.
Right, right. Yeah, it's very, very fine dust, atmospheric dust. We do see sometimes like layers from, say, a sandstorm or a dust storm that gives it a really, really noticeable one. But in general, we're just looking at the normal atmospheric dust, as well as just the general chemicals that are within the ice. One of them that we look at is a thing called methyl sulfanic acid. This stuff is released by phytoplankton, and it falls in with the snow. But during the wintertime, when the sea ice has grown so much, not much of that methyl sulfanic acid is released into the atmosphere since these plankton are covered in ice. So the levels during the wintertime are very low, and then in the summer as that sea ice melts, those levels rise again.
Hmm. So the plankton, is that a living organism?
Yes. Yeah. It's a byproduct of the photosynthesis, the MSA is.
Huh. Now, you invite, or I don't know how you do it exactly, but scientists come into the lab to study the cores, right?
Yeah.
How does the scientist get to do that?
So, in general, with the big projects, there will actually be typically several universities involved with it that all get their grant through the National Science Foundation to drill the ice. So they will be the first ones that come out here when the ice comes back from the field. And we do what's called a core processing line, where we measure every single meter of ice, and then we'll cut it into various sticks or other size samples. Typically about 50% of it or more goes back into our archive, and the rest of it will go out to these universities. They'll do their research and analysis. Once their data is published and their papers have been published, it becomes available to other scientists. They put a proposal in through our science management office, and that kind of goes out to the rest of the ice core community. And if they get approved, then they'll come out here and spend a few days or maybe a couple weeks with us, depending on how much ice they're getting. And we will cut the samples for them and then pack them and actually ship them off to their university, where they have the instrument to actually measure what it is that they're looking for in these ice cores.
And do they have to return them intact?
No, most of the analysis is destructive. If they do analysis that's non-destructive, when they're done, they will return it to us. But probably 90% of the work that's done on these cores does destroy the samples. They're either melting it or crushing it up to run it through their instrumentation, depending on what they're looking for.
Mm-hmm. And what sort of a lab do you have for them to study?
So our lab consists of two rooms. We have our exam room, which is kept at minus 24 Celsius. That's about minus 10 Fahrenheit. And that's where we have all of our tables and saws and things laid out so that we can actually cut the ice and get it packed. Then we have our main storage, which is kept at about minus 38, close to minus 40, which is at minus 40 is where Celsius and Fahrenheit cross over. And that's just where we store the cores long term. We do also have a very low-level clean room that has polarized microscopes in it and the materials we need to make thin sections of the ice, so we can actually study the ice under microscopes and look at the crystal structure, the bubble density, the physical properties of the ice itself. So that's really the only science done here, is the physical properties. When we're looking at, say, the gas analysis or chemical or isotopic analysis, that's all done at the various different universities where they have the equipment to handle that.
And then that sample is gone and it never comes back to you then at that
point. Yeah, that's usually the case, yeah.
Yeah. All right, if you've just joined us, folks, we're talking all things ice with Mr. Richard Nunn, who is an assistant curator at USGS National Ice Core Laboratory near Denver, where they store ice cores from mostly, I suppose, Greenland and Antarctica?
Yes.
Any place else we store ice from?
Yeah.
Ice cores?
As far as our lab goes, we have some cores from some of the Northern Rockies in Canada. We've got some cores from Denali out in Alaska. And we actually have, geographically speaking, the closest one to us was drilled in a glacier in Wyoming called the Fremont Glacier.
What about the brief description of the logistics of core drilling?
Yeah, there's an awful lot that goes into it. Most of the deep projects, when we're talking about anything that's over maybe 500 meters, it actually takes us multiple years, because working in Antarctica, we only have about 3 months out of the year that we can really go do any field work, from October till roughly the end of January. So the first season usually is spent just setting up the field camp and getting the drill rig in place, and then they will drill as much as they can throughout each season. On average, maybe 600 to 800 meters gets drilled, and then they will fly that back to McMurdo, which is kind of our main station that we have on the coast of Antarctica, and they'll load all the cores into insulated boxes, and they put them into a shipping container that's insulated and cooled by a couple of generators. And then they will bring an actual icebreaker in, usually to clear the sea ice, sometime in late January or early February, and then they can bring a container ship in that will actually load those containers onto it. And it takes about a month and a half to get from McMurdo to Port Hueneme, California. They then offload that container ship and attach it to a flatbed truck, keeping those generators on to keep that temperature at about minus 38 or so. And then they'll drive it out here to Denver where we can unload them and put them into our freezer.
Yeah, well, that's a big process. Good to have a central location to do this, and so you can preserve those things for the scientists to study.
Absolutely.
Can you describe some of the more interesting findings from studying ice cores?
Yeah, I mean, for one thing, it's a really great record to actually see what our atmosphere and our temperature has been doing over the last few hundred thousand years. The oldest core that was ever recovered by the Europeans, actually, is about 850,000 years old. So, you know, scientists have known for a long time about this cyclical nature of our climate changing, warming and cooling, going through these glacial and interglacial periods of the Ice Age. But now we can actually get numbers to attach to that. We can see exactly how much the temperature has been changing over that time and how the atmosphere has been changing, looking specifically at things like greenhouse gases, you know, carbon dioxide and methane, and seeing how those levels rise and fall and how they correlate with the temperature changes as well. So we get a really good picture as to exactly what the natural processes going on our planet have been when it comes to our climate over the last few hundred thousand years.
So this the study of ice cores is obviously connected to scientific predictions as to whether the climate is changing.
Yeah. When we try and look to the future, we always have to understand how these mechanisms have worked in the past. So the ice cores are the only source on the planet we can actually get a physical sample of what the atmosphere was like. And using that information as well as the isotopic data that gives us an indication as to how temperatures have changed, we can see all these natural cycles. And then using that, we're essentially plugging in to these models what's happening now with the sudden rapid increase in carbon dioxide and methane levels and trying to model what's going to happen moving forward. The difficulty with that is there's really no precedent for where we're at right now. We've never seen greenhouse gas levels rise as quickly as they have in the last century or so.
Going back 400,000 years, we've never seen something like the change in the climate that's occurring.
That's correct.
In the last
100
years.
Yeah, when we look at these normal cycles to go from a cool glacial period where it's about 8 degrees colder than we are right now, it takes a few thousand years for things to warm up to about where they're at right now, and that corresponds with a change of CO2 ranging from 200 parts per million when we're cold to about 300 parts per million during the warm period. And again, that takes place over usually a few thousand years, 3,000-4,000 years maybe. We've gone from 280 to about 400 parts per million of CO2 in the last 150, so it's an incredibly fast change, and there's no natural precedent for it. So we're sort of in unknown territory when it comes to that right now. And the best thing that we can do is to try and understand how all of these factors naturally work with each other and then use that to model what's going to happen moving forward over the next century or two.
I saw somewhere a photo on your website, which we'll get to in a minute, about bubbles of ancient air.
Yes,
actually, in the ice cores. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, that's one of the most fascinating and one of the most important aspects about ice cores is because the way that the snow compacts over time, and when you get down below about 100 meters or so, the pressure is so great that it finally solidifies into ice, and whatever air was flowing through that gets trapped at that point, and it stays trapped until we actually recover the ice and then melt it in one of our labs. So we can actually access a physical sample of what our atmospheric composition was like up to 850,000 years ago. The only other way that we can try and figure out what, say, CO2 or methane levels were would be through proxy data, looking at sediment cores from the ocean or things like that, and checking out the chemistry and trying to work backwards from there. Whereas with the ice cores, we can just get a direct sample of the atmosphere and know exactly what its composition was.
Yeah. Wow. I have to ask, given the current atmosphere, or atmosphere is a bad word, but bad choice of the word, but the current discussion about questioning science, questioning the science of climate change. You have any concerns about anti-science sabotage of your collection or defunding that might hurt you?
Yeah, I'm not too worried about sabotage. To say the truth, not a whole lot of people know we actually exist. but the funding is always an issue, regardless. But whenever there is an administration change, anybody that's in the sciences that's federally funded, we always worry about whether our funding is going to go up or down. And I mean, in the 6 years I've been here, I've seen it fluctuate a fair amount, but that's all been under the same administration. So there's definitely a little bit of concern. I don't foresee us being closed down, but I could see our funding being cut a little bit, which would be difficult. There's only two permanent employees that run this place right now anyway, so we're kind of running a bare-bones operation as is. So we'll see where the next 4 or 8 years takes us. But yeah, there's definitely a little bit of concern in all of our minds.
Are there other countries that are doing similar things?
Absolutely. That's one of the really cool things about ice core research is that it really truly is an international effort, partially because Antarctica is an international continent. So we actually work very closely with a lot of different countries in terms of either collecting the ice or analyzing it. We actually have done a number of international shipments, which always give me heartburn trying to get ice shipped from here to, say, Italy.
Yeah.
But a lot of our universities will work with universities around the country to sort of collaborate on this. And it's kind of refreshing to see that, because this is the kind of science that doesn't really give us any profit. You know, we're not making money off of drilling these cores. What we're gaining is knowledge, and the knowledge doesn't benefit one country over the other. It benefits the entire globe.
Sure.
So it really is truly an international effort.
You know, I wanted to ask you if you mentioned that nobody knows where you are, but you actually do offer public tours.
Yes, yeah, and actually they've been getting more and more popular. We only offer one tour a week. As I mentioned, there's only two of us that work here, so we have to kind of budget our time appropriately. So that being said, I've got one tour a week scheduled from now until August of 2017.
really?
Got to schedule them early, but yes, if people are interested in that, they can go to icecores.org, and there's all the information they need there to do so.
And that's a great place to get information about everything you do, isn't it?
Yes.
Icecores.org.
Icecores.org, and that'll have links to web pages for all of our specific projects as well that we have going on.
If you forgot that, you can Google National Ice Core Laboratory, and you'll get to the same place practically.
Yep.
Is there anything else you'd like our listeners to know about what you're doing down there that we haven't already covered?
We pretty much covered all of it. I'm just happy to be able to get the information out there about what we do. I think it's incredibly important work. And I guess the most important thing that I can tell people is to look into the science themselves, really understand the research, and we can understand and work together on understanding climate change.
Well, I'm glad there's not enough ice up here for you to be interested in drilling, but we've got plenty of it anyway.
I imagine so.
All right, Richard. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us about your very interesting work and your very interesting lab. I'm sure everybody's enjoyed hearing about it. Thank you very much. Good luck with your funding and continued science.
All right. Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.